Good morning, diners and travelers of the world. Hello, Peter. I feel like I should say diners and travelers of the world unite. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. Good morning, Peter.
Yeah, you travelers of the world unite. You have nothing to lose but your chains.
And a lot of euros.
And not to mention
pounds.
Yeah, that's true, but it's interesting. I think it was Karl Marx who said, workers of the world unite, you have nothing to lose but your chains. And we just got back from London, and believe it or not, there is a connection, because that's where Karl Marx is buried, and that's where that's where he did a lot of his work on book, which I haven't, the title I think is Das Kapital, and he actually wrote that in the reading room of the British Museum, where another member of the reading room was Engels, who was his big buddy. And there's a Buster George Bernard Shaw in there. And that has nothing to do with it except to say that On the Menu just got back from London, and we brought back some wonderful dining, drinking adventures that we're going to talk to you about.
Yeah, we're going to do a little change up, because we've been dealing with Australia, and we still have more shows about Australia pending.
We'll be back down under, and many of you know, in any case, there's a connection between London and Australia in particular, because the first people who went out there were all people from the London area. And the Australian accent that everybody recognizes is actually a Cockney accent from the centre of London. But that's got nothing to do with it. As you know, listeners, the mission of On the Menu Radio is to help you to find out where you can eat, drink, and have a good time, and we sure did that.
Can we mention also that the most startling thing was arriving in this grand spring morning in London, and it was absolutely slopping down snow.
But fortunately, by the next day, the snow had stopped, and it only rained then on Saturday, so we had 6 fine days in a row, and that was a whole lot of fun.
Okay, who's the first person we're interviewing?
Well, it always makes sense to start with our favorite, and those of you who visit the website regularly will know that among all the new restaurants that we tried, we thought Le Tropier and the chef Marcus Yves was at the top of the game.
And we
had the opportunity to talk to one of the owners, Shane Osborne, and then to the chef.
Now, this is kind of almost not fair, because I busted my caloric intake for the whole trip at a new restaurant, and we'll tell you about that restaurant in a minute. I want to just reintroduce listeners to one of our favorite chefs from a while back, Shane Osborne, who we've just come to admire so much. Through how many different disasters and triumphs have we done? We met you first at Pied à Terre.
Yeah, I think we met just over a year ago, and a lot's changed since then. Pied à Terre's obviously going along at full guns, getting better and better, busier and busier. And since you've been gone, we've opened up this little baby, Le Tropier, with Marcus running the kitchen. It's his restaurant, in effect. He's one of the co-owners as well, and it's opened up to great critical acclaim. It's won a couple of new Best New Restaurant Awards, and it's the talk of the town, so we're really pleased with the way things are going.
Now, that means the other foot.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, it was one of our directors. We were trying to come up with the right name, and we want this place to obviously be associated with Pied à Terre, because even though it's a lot more casual, it's more informal, the standard of the cooking is very similar to Pied à Terre's. Marcus aspires to reach the same level that I'm cooking at, and he's doing very good food of a very high standard, and same with the wine list and the service. So Le Tropier, the other foot, was a kind of tongue-in-cheek, a bit of fun, just to say that, you know, this is our other restaurant that we've been talking about doing for a long, long time, and we've finally got it off the ground.
How would you describe this area, which is new to me?
Marylebone is a real eclectic area. It's gone through a real transformation in the last kind of 5 or 6 years. You've got a lot of bespoke designers, and it's quite a wealthy area, up-and-coming area. You've got a great farmer's market on the weekend. There's lots of little boutiques, and you don't find a lot of the kind of high street chain and the multinationals that you'd see in some other parts of London. It's run by the Harry de Walden estate, which is a very old family of London, and they're very choosy and picky on who they let in into all the sites. So you won't see a McDonald's, you don't see Burger King or Kentucky Fried Chicken or anything like that in the area, which is good, because it's keeping the quality very, very high through all the retail outlets and all the restaurants and the bars and pubs.
you know, most people wouldn't know, and even listening to you, I don't remember half the time that you're actually from Perth.
Yeah, I am, yeah. I don't like to admit it too often, but yeah, I escaped in 1991, and I've been living over here for 16 years now.
Now, did you train in Australia?
Yes, I did. I did an apprenticeship, which was a four-year scheme, and after qualifying as a chef, I decided to come over to the civilized part of the world and see what food's all about. And, you know, worked in London, went out to Sweden for a couple of years, then did a bit of traveling through France and worked there for a little while.
You went to Sweden for food?
I didn't go to Sweden for food. I went to Sweden for the women. So, you know, I had to take a bit of time out.
Well, now you're settled down. You have two small children.
Yeah, I have. I have two small children, Oscar and Rose, and I love living in London. It's career-wise, I think it's the best place to be. Well, one of the best places. Paris, obviously, another one in New York, where you know, anything goes, and it's a very vibrant restaurant scene, and it's inspiring, and it's the competition is tough, and it's what keeps you going every day.
Now, what really inspired? What inspired your style of cooking?
I don't think there's one factor. I mean, the food is always evolving, and I just get inspired by working with the produce that we get. You know, I get excited when the seasons are changing. At the moment, obviously, spring is just on our doorstep, and things like asparagus, morels are coming in, and that really motivates you to change. And every year, wanting to develop the menu and bring on new dishes. And you know, I have a really good team in the kitchen, and they're very enthusiastic, and that's part of my responsibility is to teach them and train them to show them new dishes year in and year out.
But you know, the place that you left at Western Australia has become one of the greatest available larders for talented chefs.
It is. The food in Australia, Western Australia, Southern Western Australia, is very good. I don't know whether it's to this level. It's a very different style of cuisine because of the climate. The people in Australia are very relaxed. You know, everybody's going out to lunch in a pair of shorts and a pair of flip-flops, you know, and a T-shirt. You don't get that in London. The style of food that I cook is a lot more refined. It's quite elegant. And so it's more of a special occasion meal when you come to eat at Pied à Terre or you eat more Marcus's food, where I don't think you kind of get that, and people want that in Australia. It's two different climates for food.
Now, you spend most of your time at Pied à Terre?
Oh, I'm there still. You know, we're open 6 nights a week, and I'm there 5 nights a week. I take Saturday off to spend with the family, but I basically don't have anything to do with this place except come down and have a glass of champagne when I get out of the kitchen early enough. You know, it's Marcus's baby, Le Trappier. He runs the whole show, you know, he has total control over the menu. You know, he is a very, very talented chef in his own right, and you know, he doesn't need my help. If he does need my help, he gives me a call and we discuss things, and I always bounce off him as well. You know, we work as a team.
Well, I mean, I can attest to how fabulously he cooks and how fabulous his kitchen is, because we just, as I said, I just wrecked my whole budget. Now, Shane has said that this meal that we just are absolutely raving about is all you're doing. It's your food. So you actually run Le Trappier. And we're talking now, of course, to Marcus.
Yep, that's right. Marcus Eves, yeah.
Peter is saying Eves from across the room. I don't know why he's doing that, because he's just over a microphone. But all right, Marcus Eves. Marcus Eves, I mean, I was going to be introducing you anyhow. I really want to talk about your food, though, which is extraordinary. Now, you've cooked with so many characters in the past. Let's just, because it's interesting, we have all these places. Where did you work and for what chefs?
Okay, yeah, I actually started off working for Andrea Santona at Simpson's Restaurant, which was actually in Kenilworth at the time. Yeah, it was very, very interesting. Brilliant character, really, really nice guy, Greek Cypriot. And then I moved on to Somerset, which I worked at in Bath, which was for a chef called Martin Blunos. Was a restaurant called Letany. And then from there I moved on to London, where I worked for Shane Osborne at Pied à Terre. So.
And then you left?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, after working with Shane for 2 years, I moved to back into the countryside and worked for Claude Bozzi at Hibiscus,
which is another fabulous restaurant.
Yeah, lovely restaurant, really, really nice, excellent.
And they're now in London.
That's right. Yeah, they just moved to London. Actually, they opened the month before we did, so that was quite interesting.
But you said that if you were coming back to London, that there was one chef in one place you knew you wanted to work. Tell us why.
Yep, I mean, at the time I was looking to come back to London, it was definitely to come back to work for Shane at Pied-à-Terre. Shane offered me the position as sous chef at Pied-à-Terre, and it was the right time. It was definitely the right restaurant to work at, because Pied-à-Terre just reopened from their fire. They were actually closed for 10 months. A lot of new ideas bouncing around the kitchen, a lot of new inspiration, and it was just the right place to be at that time.
Is there some way, I mean, all the chefs we interview say that they like to cook seasonally and locally and sustainably. Is there something else that you could say that describes a little bit better? Because your food was 10 cuts above almost anything we eat.
I mean, the main thing is that whenever you're eating, say, for example, if you're eating something like a foie gras dish, you can't get bogged down and feel like full after you've eaten it. You have to still feel fresh. When you've eaten a dish, you have to still feel like you've thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. But you still have to feel fresh after. You can't feel, you know, sort of just bogged down by the heavy flavours and the richness of it. It has to be light. That's the main emphasis, I think, is light. Light is definitely the way forward.
Yeah, I thought that was the best foie gras dish I've ever eaten, and I've eaten foie gras all over the world. Just describe what goes into that dish for our listeners.
Okay, the foie gras dish at the moment I've got on is pan-fried foie gras with apricot and vanilla puree, and sweet and sour sauce with pak choi and bay leaves, fresh bay leaf infusion. The main reason that I put the dish on was because, you know, as growing up and working in kitchens, you seem to see a lot of chefs put foie gras with fruit. And I had a recipe from a good while ago with apricot and vanilla, and I just thought it'd just be brilliant. And then you've got the sweet and sour, which everybody knows sweet and sour is, you know, is really, really good match for foie gras. And that's it, really. It's slightly Asian influence, because that's at the moment, that's what I'm really, really looking into, Asian food. Really, really enjoyable for me at the moment, so that's definitely where I got the influence from.
Have you ever been to Asia?
I've never been to Asia, no. I spend quite a bit of time, or when I do get a bit of time off or have an early night at the restaurant, I do tend to go and have a bit of dim sum or go out and eat at different Asian restaurants and just try and get a feel for what they're doing, because I find it really, really interesting.
Now, the scallop carpaccio was a stunner. It was the best stuff I ever had.
Excellent. No, that's brilliant as well. Especially coming into the spring now, I like to work on a lot of raw fish, a lot of raw vegetables as well, because we're coming. Like, obviously, the spring is here, yeah, and the vegetables now are coming into their own. When you're in the winter, you sort of in the autumn, you tend to rely on game, you know, really, really meaty sort of strong fish and things like that. And now we're into the springtime. I definitely rely on a lot more sort of raw vegetables, nice fennel salads, things like that. Really, so. Yeah.
What were those? You had a confit of fennel. Was it grapefruit?
That's right. Yeah. I definitely like to play with citrus as well, because especially working with Claude at Hibiscus, he just opened my eyes to really everybody, or every chef wouldn't think twice about putting some lemon juice on a piece of fish when it came out of the pan. So why not use grapefruit or lime, or, you know, any other kind of citrus, really. So it's just a case of broadening your knowledge and opening your mind to different ways of using different ingredients.
And I want you to just run through this lamb dish. Now, we eat lamb, like really good quality lamb, so it's not just the quality of the lamb. We eat it probably once a week, and it's that quality of lamb, but never have I had anything tasted that good. Run us through that dish.
Okay, the lamb was actually best end of lamb. I mean, I've just finished using the saddle, but as again, like I said, we're moving into the spring now. I'm using best end of lamb, and it was with poivrade artichokes, which are obviously the French baby artichokes, with parmesan gnocchi, and caper and mint sauce, which was lamb sauce with capers, mint, and then just a touch of olive oil at the end. I mean, the main thing with that dish is definitely getting good quality lamb and making sure it's hung properly.
What is exactly best end of lamb?
The best end of lamb is the center cut of meat. It's almost, I suppose, the best way to describe it is it's the piece of meat just at the bottom of the ribs, the rib cage. So, but it's probably the most tender piece of lamb that you'll get to eat.
Now, these desserts were fabulous too. Are they your ideas, or do you have a separate chef?
Yep. No, all the dessert menu comes from myself. The whole menu, absolutely everything on the menu is all from myself. Desserts are something, I mean, just lately as well, because I've just changed the menu, a lot of the customers are actually saying that the desserts are the best thing that they're eating on the menu at the moment. And it's something that I'm very, very conscious about, because I'm not actually a pastry chef. I always put that little bit more effort into the pastry, because I wouldn't want anyone leaving the restaurant saying, oh, you know, Marcus really does need to have a pastry chef. You know, that's the last thing I really, really want. So I give that extra little bit of energy and an extra little bit of time thinking about desserts. And at the moment it's starting to pay off, so.
You have a website?
That's right, we do, yeah. It's, L'Autrepied, or should I say L'Autrepied?
Let's actually spell it. It's
L'Autrepied.
And they can always Google that. And what section of town are you in?
We're in Marylebone, just, in the Marylebone village. We're on a road called Blandford Street, which is just off Marylebone High Street.
And you're open what hours?
We're actually open. We've just gone 7 days a week now, so we're open lunch and dinner every single day now. Yeah, so Sunday evening is the only evening that we close. We close slightly earlier, which is 9:30. But other than that, 7 days a week.
So you not only should come, you have no excuse not to.
No, Rabbit, that was really profound. Thank you so much.
So, listeners, you can tell Ann was having a pretty good time.
I know. And now I guess we'll take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
We're back, in case you hadn't noticed.
Yes, you're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig, and email us sometimes.
You're very quiet today.
I'm worn out.
Give me a little more volume here. It turns out.
Well, we're going to go to another second generation spot, but why don't you introduce it?
Yeah,
then?
good things, it turns out, come in pairs, because last year we discovered, well, we didn't discover Pied-à-Terre, but we got to go there for the first time. We did discover a restaurant called Arbutus. And wouldn't you know, just as Pied-à-Terre has a new outlet owned by the same people called L'Autrepied, our friends from Arbutus, Will Smith and Anthony Dimitri, have gone ahead and opened a new place themselves called Wild Honey in a very different part of town from Soho, and on the edge of Mayfair near Regent Street in the shopping area.
Yeah, good shopping, except we couldn't afford to buy anything.
Yeah, it's
$2 to a pound.
Yeah, it's a lovely place, and Will threatened that he wasn't originally going to be there because he was on vacation, but of course, since End the Menu was going to be here, he did come in on what maybe it was a day off, maybe it wasn't. He did stay there the whole time, but before we had lunch, he talked to us, and then right after that, we go straight through to continue the interview with Colin Kelly, who, like Marcus, Marcus was the sous chef at Pied-à-Terre. Colin Kelly was the sous chef at Arbutus. I can never remember which it is.
Arbutus.
And now he's fully in charge of the kitchen at Wild Honey. So here they both are.
We first met Will Smith at his other restaurant, Arbutus, and loved it. We loved that restaurant, still love that restaurant. Every time we send anyone to Arbutus, they just come back raving. And one of the interesting things is that they tend to like Pied-à-Terre and Arbutus. Now, how about that for a price contrast? Anyhow, we're now at Wild Honey, your second restaurant, where you've already put up every new award and a Michelin star. Will, tell us, what is your basic concept? You did a lot of research on these restaurants, and you found a niche, and you were filling it. What is your concept?
Well, I suppose our basic concept, simply put, is great food at great prices. And Anthony, my business partner, and I both came from a fine dining background. where we were offering great food, great service, but in very traditional, formal, starched, white tablecloth sort of environments, and quite stiff service and a great deal of formality. And with that, you tend to get quite a price point as well. Well, Anthony and I have worked together for about 10 years now. And over the years, as we were doing this, we started thinking to ourselves, is this really what dining is about? Are people really relaxing and enjoying their meals, or are they coming because it's a gastronomic point to tick off? Well, okay, there's a few people who want to do that, but only a very few people. Food is out there. A lot of people like to dine out for the casualness, yes, the food, of course, but the food is probably only 40% of it, we always say, and the rest of it is maybe the theatre, in inverted commas, I suppose, the theatre, the look of the room, the people you're dining with, the friends you're with, the feel of the atmosphere, etc. So we slowly evolved an idea and thought, hang on, we're busting a gut here trying to fill a restaurant where our guests are paying £70 to £100 a head, a lot of money, and it's hard work, and they come in with huge expectations, and it's very hard to match those expectations. And we felt what we're doing here is special occasion. And we sort of put two and two together and decided that why can't we just simplify some of the over-the-top parts of the restaurant, some of the over-the-top parts of the service and the food, simplify it on the plate, simplify it in the room, simplify the room itself and the design of the room, and try and offer people still great food, maybe not over-garnished and over-embellished and all crazy, but beautiful flavors and beautiful textures and seasonality and all that, which is great about eating out, but try and offer it at a price point which was opening the door to so many more people rather than the small percentage of people who want to spend £70 to £100 a head. And for us, a key point really was that people should be able to come in to our restaurant and have a three-course meal and a bottle of wine and be out of the door for between £80 and £90 all in, service and a three-course meal and drinks. So that's where we started from, and that's where we came up with the Arbutus idea and simplified a few things, no tablecloth.
Arbutus is a tree, by the way.
Indeed. Arbutus, always hard thing, naming a restaurant.
Yes.
And we came up with the idea of Arbutus was a tree that used to grow in Soho Square, so we use that as a link.
So to take us in a different direction now, is Wild Honey Arbutus number two? It's really not. It's the same concept, but in a way it's different too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think Anthony and I have decided this is the way we want to go ahead and move on as a business. We
now,
enjoy
the
and we enjoy this sort of more casual, relaxed style. So what we've done here, it's a different room, most definitely a different room. We had an opportunity for an opportunity came up for a site in Mayfair, a site we'd seen many years ago actually, and had considered.
It's gorgeous.
It's a beautiful room.
It's historically certified.
Yeah, and it's in a fantastic location in the heart of Mayfair. And a few years ago, when it came to us, it wasn't right for us at that time. The funding wasn't there, and we weren't in the right place at the right time. Anyway, it came up suddenly about a year ago, and we'd only been into our Arbutus concept then about 9 months, so it was very soon for us to start looking for a second site, which we weren't really doing, but we thought it was something we couldn't turn down. And very much in our minds was to, I don't like to say roll out because that sounds a little too
corporate.
Yeah, exactly. and we like to, I'd like to think our two restaurants have an individuality to themselves, but we certainly saw it as an opportunity to do a second restaurant in the same line as, in the same style, if you like, as Arbutus. Similar price points, so we started off with the Great Value lunch menu, the Great Value pre-theatre menu, a seasonal menu, changing regularly, menu changes daily, a simple wine list, only 50 wines on the wine list, 25 reds, 25 whites, all of those available as a third of a bottle, carafe. So again, accessibility. For us, it's about the place looking relaxed, informal, where anyone can go in and dine in there. And we like to think we look around the room at night, and we might see in each of our restaurants, you might look around the room and you might see three or four girls who are just old school mates and out having dinner. You might see a couple of business people having a very formal, serious business powwow. You might see a student being taken out by their parents. We see all sorts. We and some people are in suits and some people are in jeans and t-shirts. And
what really is the I mean, the decor is certainly one major point of difference.
Mm. Well, this is where actually, and so we came with that idea, let's do, if you like, another Arbutus with a different name in Mayfair, which is only 10, 15-minute walk apart from our other restaurant. The reality has been slightly different. Like you say, the room here is feels much more formal. I always say it's much more a Mayfair room. It's beautiful, rich, dark oak paneling.
Oh, the paneling is just extraordinary.
And it adds great character
and
to the room.
And the ceiling. Tell us about the ceiling.
Yeah, I mean, the ceiling. Well, absolutely. It's beautiful moldings in the ceiling there, which is right. Which has been there a long time. And we wanted to keep all that. And actually, when the restaurant opened and our customers started coming in, we started realizing, actually, that although we're only 10, 15-minute walk apart,
the different customers.
Our clientele, it's black and white. I mean, I think Regent Street is it's the great divide. The Soho crowd is very much a media, marketing, publishing, television, arty type of crowd. The Mayfair crowd is very much property, private equity, the auction market, the around here there's lots of little private antique shops and things like that. So very different crowd we get here. And although they're a similar concept, I would say Wild Honey has slowly developed a little. We've had to, you know, we're not the sort of people who are like, this is our concept, this is what you get.
Yeah.
Our market is different here, and we've realized that, and slowly we've adjusted our wine list, started to put on wines that are a little more appropriate for the clientele
so
here.
So is this a little more upscale than Arbutus?
I think it has that feel slightly, and I think that's just given with the formality of the oak paneling, I think, gives it that feel.
Yeah, you took the oak paneling, and you put some just absolutely amazing contemporary, very, very contemporary art against this paneling.
Well, we, you know,
this is sort of how we decorated our house, by the way, a Victorian house, to put in all this contemporary stuff.
Well, I think, but I love that sort of combination of the old and the new, and I think it can work really well if it's done carefully. And all our artwork is from a local gallery.
Oh, is it for sale?
And it's all for sale. It's all through a gallery called the Crane Calman Gallery, which is in Brompton Road.
There's some I would like to have.
Yeah, and they're lovely pieces. But we just kept the gallery owner to a very few pieces, so you very much feel it's not an art gallery. It is a room.
Well, of course, the big test is going to be, why don't you, I will introduce your chef here, and we'll talk a little bit about the food. The chef is Colin Kelly, and you were Colin sous chef at Arbutus, were you?
Yeah, I was quite lucky to work with Anthony for the last maybe 4 years.
Oh, and listen to that brogue.
Yeah. further away?
And, well, anyhow, so you are in... You're from where?
Ireland, the center of Ireland.
What
Offaly,
county?
County Offaly.
Okay. And you trained in Ireland or here?
Yeah, quite briefly. I went to college. I went to college in Ireland. I was quite lucky to work in a very good restaurant in Dublin. After that, I came to London about 5 years ago. Worked at the Orrery. Went to work at Anthony at Putney Bridge. And went from there to Arbutus. And then to Wild Honey.
Now, you tell us, from your perspective, how is the food at Wild Honey different from Arbutus?
When we opened Wild Honey, we used quite a lot of the same cuts, quite a lot of the same ideas of Arbutus. But as Will was explaining, the clientele are a little bit different. Grey mullet and cheaper cuts of fish and cheaper cuts of meat. People were looking for a little bit more, maybe. So we've had to adapt our menu, add some different things to it, like foie gras, terrine, rack of veal, a little bit more expensive, but still quite simply cooked, still with the same methods, but without getting too complicated.
But it's more French, is it?
No, it's the same. Anthony's cooking is quite French-based. All the techniques are.
But is it the brasserie, bistro?
Well, I would say it's the same as a bistro modern.
Now, what are your favorite? I'm looking at this menu. We haven't had anything to eat here yet. We will be having lunch. What kinds of things will we be eating?
I hope you try the Gurnard Escabeche. That was one of our favorite starters. The rack of veal is fantastic. And also, as well, our Wild Honey ice cream is synonymous with all our reviews.
Which is?
The Wild Honey ice cream for dessert.
Wild Honey ice cream,
yeah.
Made in-house, served with a crushed honeycomb?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's healthy, too.
Yeah.
Your bouillabaisse. That's traditional?
Yeah, absolutely. We've been doing the bouillabaisse since we were at Putney Bridge. The same methods. Obviously, we try to replicate what you might get at the Port of Marseille. We use the cheap cuts of, we use Gurnard, sea bream, pollock as a garnish, rui aioli, croutons. It's basically saffron soup. The same way as we've been doing it at Arbutus, same way as we've done it at Putney Bridge as well.
Now, what was it I was looking at that was, oh yeah, you know, I've never understood nettle soup. I, you know, for some reason I've never even had nettle soup, but that has to be the standard for, I don't know, everybody seems to, the foodie crowd seems to relish nettle soup.
Well, it's a little bit different. You don't see it on most menus, but now that it's in season, it's great to use
it. It's
all English stuff that we use. We get it from a farm called Cherry Tree Farm. They grow it themselves. And, yeah, it's a nice soup. It's different as well. It's nice to have on the menu, you know.
Okay, now tell, you have a three-course lunch special, set lunch.
Yeah.
With choices for each course.
Absolutely, yeah.
For how much?
$16.95 for the lunch menu. And for the pre-theater,
pounds.
Okay. It's $18.95.
That's in pounds, and remember, it's $2 to the pound, which is really screwing up our trip. But anyhow, well, I'm looking forward to tasting this, and because I love the food at Arbutus. And Peter is motioning. When he does that, touching his lips, I never know what he is. He's throwing me kisses, or he wants the microphone. I think he wants the microphone.
The answer is it's probably both, but we can't sign off here without either Colin or Will letting us know how much recognition Wild Honey's already received in being open only about 9 or 10 months. So who'd like to do that? Want to list some of the awards?
Well, we're not in this game to win awards. We're just in it, to do it because we love this business.
Yeah,
but it's always great to be recognized.
It's,
absolutely,
it's an indication that it's this is not just Will and Anthony and Colin talking about it. It's not just Anne and Peter saying it's a great
absolutely
place.
No, absolutely.
Everybody thinks so too.
Yeah, no, we've been blessed with some wonderful awards. We opened in July last year, and by I think September or October last year, we'd won the Time Out Best New Restaurant of the Year award, which is a very influential award to win. We'd won the Square Meal Best New Restaurant Opening award, and also Decanter Wine Magazine voted us as their Restaurant of the Month. And then latterly in January this year, we won our first Michelin star for Wild Honey, which was, I suppose, the icing on the cake, especially for the chefs.
Now, you said it. At Arbutus, you really weren't looking for one. Did you change your mind now and decide that it was all right to get one?
No, we didn't. No, we've carried on doing what we do. I think the Michelin thing, it's much debated. But at the end of the day, I think it's about consistency, not complicating food, keeping it consistent, keeping it fresh, and I think a chef keeping a sensible head on his shoulders in the kitchen and just aiming to get the best flavor out of the best possible produce. And lo and behold, along came a Michelin star. It's never been our aim for a Michelin star, no.
Well, it's so wonderful to be able to meet you again and to say hello to Colin, and we're looking forward to a great lunch.
Thank you very much.
Well, and with the close of that segment, I think it's time to take another break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Yes, we're glad that you're staying around to continue sharing our adventures in dining in London. We also managed to locate some really fine dining in hotels, and we're going to explore two of those coming up. The first one is a restaurant called Bordeaux, which is spelled B-O-R-D apostrophe E-A-U-X. Which,
yeah, it's a sort of a play on words, which will become clear as we talk to the manager and the chef.
Yeah, did we explain that on the interview?
I think we asked them to. So,
okay, well, tell us about the hotel.
Yeah, why don't we let them do that?
It's a beautiful spring evening over Hyde Park, facing west, out of a wonderful new restaurant called Bordeaux. We're trying to remember that yesterday it snowed. Today it's a beautiful spring day, and we have the opportunity to meet Michelle Lindley, who is the manager of a great new restaurant called Bordeaux. Well, I'm going to have her pronounce it properly. It's in the Grosvenor House Hotel on Park Lane, looking out into this wonderful evening sky. Michelle, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Looking forward to it.
Now, do a pronunciation so we get it right, and then talk to us about this restaurant, when it opened, and what it's like.
It's called Bordeaux, and it's with apostrophe, so B-O-R-D, apostrophe E-A-U-X. And we've been open for a month now. The whole idea behind Bordeaux with the apostrophe is it's the edge of the water, water's edge. So anything that relates to the southwest of France or the coastal parts of Britain, where the coastal exchange has happened over thousands of years, is what that apostrophe links into.
Is that actually how the region in France got its name, do you know?
I'm not sure, actually.
Probably makes sense, doesn't it? But of course, those of you who are history buffs like me know that for a long time, that part of France was actually part of England. It was called Aquitaine, and the Princess of France who owned it became the Queen of England. And she was played by Catherine Hepburn in a film called Lion in Winter. I don't know if you know that. A little bit of history for everybody, but maybe that's why it was called that. But is your restaurant trying to echo the cuisine of that region?
Absolutely. We serve authentic southwest of France dishes, home-style cooking, brasserie-style restaurant, and just lots of dishes to share, beautiful fruits de mer platters, cassoulet, lots of recipes that our head chef, chef patron Olivier Couillot, has taken from his family history with restaurants.
And he's from a region in France not too far, just to, I think, to the north of Bordeaux, correct?
That's correct, Poitiers.
There are a number of different components to this restaurant. Could you run us through, like, the cafe and the private room? And
absolutely. There's Le Petit Café, which is a small little épicerie or boulangerie where we sell beautifully handmade breads that our baker makes from 1 a.m. every evening. He's from Paris, Bertrand. And we also serve to-go coffees and beautiful grilled sandwiches, products from the southwest of France, like Caudalie skin products and beautiful mariage frère teas. We also have a private dining room, which is called Pechoun. Pechoun takes the name from Ollie, our head chef's family home. In the summertime, they would go there, and it was just a small, what we call in Canada, a cabin, a small summer home with the name Pechoun. We have a brasserie with 160 seats and a beautiful terrace overlooking Hyde Park.
What about some of the decor details that you found in the vintage French?
We were very lucky to be connected with a fantastic designer who put us in contact with a brasserie that closed down in the south of France. And our beautiful antique floors are 115 years old, black and white Czech. We have a beautiful nickel bar from the brasserie, beautiful wooden front to our private dining room, and our hostess station is also an original host station from this brasserie in the south of France.
Now, you've been in the restaurant just a little bit, you told us, although I can't believe that since you must be all of about 17 years old. Mm-hmm. But Michelle, you said that when you heard about this place and you decided you just wanted to come here, so you arranged for someone to get in touch with you. Is that what happened?
Absolutely. I heard about Ollie, and I know he has such a strong reputation as a passionate chef, somebody who stands behind honesty with working with local producers and the way he treats his team. He's a very passionate and inspired person to work with, and I was just really excited to work alongside someone like Ollie.
Now, we understand from the conversations we've had already that you already have people from the neighborhood, which is Mayfair, who are regulars. So would it be a smart thing to do for people who are visiting to make a reservation for themselves, do you think?
Most certainly. And if you wanted to have a private dinner, our private dining room, Pechoun, is also a wonderful place to book without any booking fee. You're welcome just to have an a la carte menu in there as well.
So this is a lunch place. It's a dinner place. It's a great place to stop by for a quick bite at breakfast time. It's within 300 meters of Hyde Park Corner. No, a little further from Hyde Park Corner. It's about 300 meters from Speaker's Corner, just down the road from Marble Arch. You're going to walk by here or ride by here, and it would be a great place to stop when you did that. And Michelle, I'm sure you have a final word to encourage people to come here.
We look forward to warmly welcoming you to the brasserie, and get your sunglasses and your hats on ready for the terrace in the summertime.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Still in Bordeaux. Actually, we're still in London, but we have the chef here to talk to us, Ali Couillot, and he is from France, and he is from Poitiers, which is a little north of Bordeaux, as I understand it. Ali, how did you get to this place from France?
Well, I've been over here for 16 years. I worked in a few different restaurants in London. I've opened three restaurants before for other people. So I've worked with other people. This is, and Bordeaux is really the big one. I mean, I've opened, a restaurant called La Trompette in Chiswick. I spent 5 years there. I opened the Grill Room at the Dorchester, and most recently I opened the Thomas Kitchen.
Right, then that's the casual place with Tom Akers, right? Is it?
Yes, that's correct, yes.
Well, you're better here, I think. You love it here, I understand.
I do. Here, it's almost like going back to being a kid, because I cook, things I used to cook with my mom and my aunt, because my family got a restaurant in France, so that's where I grew up. And a lot of the dishes on the menu is stuff I used to cook, you know, since I've seen it being done since I was a kid.
Now, is it country French?
Yes, you could say that. Yeah, country French sounds good, yes.
Now, I understand you are just passionate about ingredients. Tell us about that.
Yes, well, what we try to do is we try to work with the small producers and the small farmers, from the Southwest and from over here as well. Obviously with the volume of covers, we have to use, you know, a couple of the bigger companies, in London, but 80% of our suppliers, the small people, so small farmers, small producers. And I spent, before I opened, Bordeaux, I spent, month and month, you know, traveling down the Southwest, traveling in England as well, and meeting, you know, the producers and the farmers. And we now worked with quite a few of them. There's a couple they've never delivered in London before.
So we could actually define more precisely your French country cooking is Southwest?
Yes, correct, yes. It would start from Poitiers, which is like the Poitou-Charentes region, and it would follow the Atlantic coast down to Bordeaux, down to Les Landes, and then down to Gascony, and then the Basque country. We cover a little bit of northern Spain as well.
I love Basque.
Basque is the way forward. Basque is amazing. My brother live, they live in Biarritz. Well, they live about 10-15 minutes from Biarritz. So I spend quite a lot of time down there. And it's just the most amazing place. I've done loads of traveling down the Southwest, down Gascony, the Périgord, the Basque Country, and it's just amazing. The way they live there is really good. Because they're very protective of what they've got. So they don't like anyone. They don't like anyone else. They're really, really passionate about, you know, about the way they live, about the food, about pretty much of everything they do. You know, they're really, really passionate people. And it's the same over here, you know, in the restaurant. I'm passionate about what I do. You know, we really try to be honest about, you know, about what we do here. You know, we don't charge too much money for the food. We use the best and the freshest ingredients, you know, we can find. And the way, I mean, it's pretty much the whole concept of the restaurant, you know, really, trying to make people feel comfortable. A little bit like when you're home, you know, when you go home, your mum cooks, everyone sits around the table, and then, you know, she just puts everything in big pots on the table and everyone just digs in. So that's what we try to recreate here, that sort of family atmosphere.
I just wanted to quickly clarify, listeners, that the southwest that we're talking about here is the southwest of France, the home of foie gras, the home of pigeon, the home of wonderful duck, and things like that. So don't get it confused with Devon and Cornwall if you're coming to this country, although I'm sure you're also getting produce from right around London too.
Correct, yes. A few suppliers are in London. The main suppliers are, they happen to be in the southwest of England. So they're in Wales, Devon, Somerset, Gloucestershire, and it just happened this way, really. A lot of our small farmers are from the southwest of England.
Now, what chefs come to mind as mentors or people you really admire, your heroes?
That's very easy. There's two. Phil Howard and Bruce Poole. Phil's coming for dinner tomorrow night.
And where is he from?
He's English, but he's the chef at the Square restaurant.
We like the Square.
Square is amazing, huh? Square is amazing. I worked there. I worked at the old Square when it was on a different address on King Street. I worked there, and I worked at the new one as well.
I bet you were there when we were there.
Possibly, yes.
Yes, and he's been on the program. Yes, he has. Now, you're going to be doing a tasting menu tonight. What kinds of things can we expect to have on a tasting menu?
Well, I think you're going to have duck, I'm afraid, and foie gras. You can't get rid
Oh, that's really hard.
charcuterie, cured meat. You know, we cure our own meat in the cellar.
I saw it hanging.
So there's ham. We do ham. We do lomo, which is like a Spanish loin of pork cured with paprika and garlic. We do duck breast. And we got ham as well, which will take about 4 or 5 months to another 4 or 5 months to cure. But I think you need to, and tapas as well. I mean, there's quite a big influence, you know, the Basque country on the menu.
Tell us about those wonderful cheeses that I saw in that room.
Ah, the cheese. Yes, the cheese. We get that from a small guy. It's a company based just outside London, but they work with small producers and farmers. Most of it in the southwest, a few in England as well. So the cheese board covers obviously the southwest of France, but we do a few Spanish cheeses as well and a few English cheeses, because now you get really good English cheeses. So we try to, I mean, it's mainly French, but a few Spanish, a few English cheeses.
Well, you are delightful, and I can hardly wait. You're so much fun. So, listeners, do come here and do introduce yourself to the chef, too. Ollie, it's been a pleasure. Thank you, and I look forward to this tasting menu.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And then I hope to see, you know, whoever's listening, come and grab a bite to eat and have fun.
And did we have fun?
We certainly did. And that completes our third segment of the program.
So we're going to take a break?
Yes, but hang around, listeners, so that you can hear about Pearl.
And we'll see you back on the other side.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And don't forget to email us because we'd like to hear from you. The email address is onthemenu@onthemenuradio.com. We're next going to take a discussion.
We're a little on there. Did we not know what was going to happen next?
No, we actually, this was the easiest trot out to dinner because it was right in the hotel where we were staying. It's Pearl. And, boy, you can get a whole bunch of lessons in decor by going to that place.
We had to discover how to get there inside the hotel because, contrary to what it had done the rest of the week, it actually started to rain and was also sort of cold again. So we found a way through the wonderful building, which used to be the headquarters of the Pearl Assurance Company, and it's a very, very elegant space.
How many kinds of marble did he say? Well, maybe he says it in the interview.
17, I think. And Pearl, curiously enough, was actually sublet to a bank. So it was a glorious faux Victorian, actually 1920s vintage banking chamber turned into a restaurant. And Russell Cox, the manager, talked to us about how that happened and the whole story of what's happening these days at this wonderful restaurant.
Russell Cox, here we are sitting in this gorgeous restaurant in Renaissance Chancery Court Hotel. It's Pearl. It's private dining. It is a general dining room. It is a bar. We stayed at this hotel 3 times and have never been in here. Tell us what we've missed.
You've missed one of the most stunning, sensational dining rooms in London, I think. It's an absolute experience. You don't just come here for dinner. You come here for special occasions. You come here for a dining experience. The chef in the kitchen is creating wonderful dishes. Our mixologist in the bar has got an amazing selection of cocktails.
We've got very trendy cocktails.
Absolutely, absolutely. We've got a big selection of wines, 52 different wines by the glass and 450 by the bottle. So it's one of the best wine lists in London. We're quite proud of it.
Let's jump back a little bit now. And you're working in London. You've been in London for 4.5 years, you told me.
That's right.
But you were originally from Adelaide, Australia. How did you end up here?
I spent 5 years traveling around Australia, working in various places, up in Queensland and Sydney, in ski resorts. And I had the opportunity, because of my grandparents were born over here, that I could travel over here and work for 4 years.
Oh, so you've right of abode and all that.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. I have an ancestry visa. And on the way, I spent a year working in Canada. I worked for the Fairmont Hotels across there for a year.
Oh.
And that was fantastic. I really enjoyed that. And then four years in London, and I've extended my visa. Not quite ready to go home yet.
Uh-huh. Now, you've had a lot of experience with small hotels, large hotels, transitions. Tell us about, this used to be, I wouldn't say a quainter, but I think a more sedate place. Absolutely. Called
QC.
QC?
For Queen's Council, exactly. Because of the area we're in, the Holborn District, which is, there's a lot of law firms, legal courts in this area, and they were trying to come up with a name to match the area. And so when the restaurant opened in the year 2000, it was very different. And after...
This is an historical building.
It is.
It's a gorgeous building.
The building itself was built in 1914 by the Pearl Assurance Company. And when they opened it up, they put a lot of money into it. I mean, there's some amazing Swedish green marble columns. There's actually 7 different types of marble in this room. So it's quite striking.
It is. But when you first came here and it was... QC. It was also, by your standards, more sedate.
Absolutely, yeah.
It lacked the vibe.
It didn't have the wow factor. And in 2003, when they decided to have a refurbishment, we got United Designers to come in. And they're very well known for restaurant design. They did the first Gordon Ramsay restaurant. They did the Nobu restaurant. They've done a number of the top dining rooms in London. They're quite well known around London. And they came in, waved the magic wand around, and this is what they came up with. It's
gorgeous. I love all these pearls and crystals. I was figuring out how I could get that hanging from my ceilings. I was looking at them very carefully, but although I can't picture duplicating it. Tell us a little bit about what a restaurant manager such as you are does, really.
Well, it all starts at the front door, really. I love to be the first face that people see when they come into the restaurant.
Smiling
to welcome and greet them, especially if I've spoken to them on the phone previously, taking their reservation. Sometimes I can pick the voice as they walk in, and I'll say, you know, oh, you're
that's
Mr.
pretty
McDonald's.
Good.
I help with the making sure the website's up to date, making sure the food's getting served, making sure the kitchen knows what's coming up from day to day, as well as assisting with the training of staff and organizing the cocktail list. It's quite a varied responsibility.
Now, tell us about your bar program. I mean, I just glanced, since I just did that article on trendy cocktails, I glanced at yours, and yours are some trendy cocktails, but you said you're even going to get more so because
Absolutely.
You're, yeah, go ahead, tell us about that.
Well, we started playing around with cocktails many years ago, but one thing which we became quite well known for is just around the time of the smoking ban, we came up with the Nicotini.
Oh, yeah, what is that? I saw
it's
that.
A Cuban rum infused with a Cuban cigar with a little bit of Kahlua, some lemon juice, a little bit of egg white, shaken into a martini glass. And you get you get a bit of a burn from the tobacco, a little bit of a kick. You get your nicotine fix, and you don't have to go outside in the rain.
That is totally mad. I mean, I'm not sure I would order that.
Well, I wouldn't have more than one anyway.
I guess not. But no, you're also your pastry chef and your bar chef.
Yes. Gustavo, our head barman, now our head mixologist. They're coming up with, we're actually launching it on Monday in 2 days' time, a range of dessert cocktails. So we've got lemon meringue, we've got strawberries and cream, rhubarb crumble. There's also a sherry trifle. We tried to sort of combine British desserts with cocktails, and they really are spectacular.
And what else is unique about Pearl?
Our selection of wines by the glass, as I said, we've got 52 different wines available. We do flights of wine, so you can have sort of 3 smaller portions.
They're doing that with cocktails too now.
Indeed.
In the States they are.
Yep. We recently launched a new range of, we revamped our beer list. Instead of having the beers which you can find everywhere, your Stella Artois, your Beck's, your Budweiser, we looked and got some amazing boutique beers, and these days we're doing a beer matching menu. So you can have the tasting menu, which is five smaller courses, and a beer to match each course.
That's hot. I know.
I mean, we've got this amazing, it's called La Gueule Blanche. It's a wheat beer from France with flavors of coriander and citrus and curacao. That's an amazing match for the scallops and frog's legs. That's brilliant.
With scallops and frog's legs.
Scallops and frog's legs.
And beer. Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful.
Why not? And there's also another beer which I'm really fascinated by. It's Innocent Gun. It's an oak-aged ale, and that goes so well with roasted meat. We've got it at the moment with the pork, but it goes very equally well with venison as well.
That sounds really exciting. Now, are we going to be talking to the chef about the kitchen, or are you going to tell us about the food?
I can tell you a little bit about the food. It's a modern
French
cuisine.
First of all, the chef is?
The chef's name is Jun Tanaka. He's Japanese, but he's been living in Britain since the age of five, and he's trained in some of the best dining rooms. He worked under Marco Pierre White in two of his restaurants. He's worked at seven Michelin-star restaurants, including Le Gavroche, The Square, The Capitol Hotel, and he really does have an amazing sense of flavor. And with the Japanese touch to French cuisine, a lot of the sauces are a little bit lighter. I mean, because French cooking can tend to be on the heavier side. But for example, with his tempura, instead of using beer in the batter, he'll use sparkling water, which just lightens things up a little bit.
That's great. And so you have you were telling me you do breakfast sometimes. What, like breakfast meetings?
Yeah. So we're open for breakfast every day. We serve an a la carte breakfast as well as a sort of small continental buffet. And we're the second restaurant in the hotel for breakfast. There is another restaurant which serves buffet. If people want a quicker experience, just eat and go, they go to the lounge restaurant. But if they're looking for more of a, as I said, a dining experience in the morning, especially for breakfast meetings, this is a place they come.
And lunch?
Lunch, yes, absolutely. The lunch menu and the dinner menu are quite different. The lunch menu is geared to be a little bit quicker because people tend to want to be in and out a little bit more. But as I said, the menu changes every couple of months. It tries to change it seasonally.
And private dining up till that is so sweet, that room.
We've got a private dining room we call Silhouette, which seats up to 12 people in comfort.
And what are the highlights of this menu? You do a tasting menu, obviously.
Absolutely, yeah. The chef likes to mix and match things. For example, at the moment we've got pork with a scallop, a little bit of Savoy cabbage puree. Let me think, what else have we got? There's the sea bream, which is poached in red wine on a Cavolo Nero risotto. Some really interesting creations.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. And just to see what all this is about. Did you say you introduced music? You used to be a DJ, which is interesting.
Oh, many years ago. I understand how important music can be to a dining experience. So to get that quite right, I mean, we have a pianist here, which will play Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights. But also just making sure the music selection in the restaurant is suitable for what we're trying to produce.
Well, with that, I'll say let's move on to the next phase of our experience, which is having a cocktail. Why and not? Having a tasting menu.
Absolutely.
And Russell, thank you for talking to us. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Well, I think it's about enough excitement for one program, don't you think, Rabbit?
Enough excitement for 1 week. Don't forget to join us again next week, same time, place. Same time, same place. Can't even get the words out right. And we're going to be staying in London with some more adventures to tell you about. So we hope you'll join us then. And until then, bye-bye, listeners.
Bye-bye.